from the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, November the 20th, 2023, Thanksgiving week. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Be there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Monday, let's do that Monday march back to work. Come on. Stiffen up your back, force a smile on your face, and make people wonder what you've been up to, and that should suffice. Let's get things started properly with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. Good one here, too. It says, where there's a will, there's a way. Try to remember that. Yes. And where there's a won't, there isn't.
I got a bad feeling about this.
So now let's move along to the so-called educational part of the blogcast.
Twisted history.
Let's go.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happened on this day throughout history.
Oh, I know.
Some cool, some not so cool.
It was there.
Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
All righty.
You might be quizzed.
Sure, bring it on. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1947, the Princess Elizabeth married Lieutenant Philip Mountbatten, who became the Duke of Edinburgh at Westminster Abbey in London. Oh, what a ceremony. Then again, would you expect anything less? They're British, for crying out loud. And it was on this day in 1985, Microsoft Windows 1.0, the first graphical personal computer operating environment developed by Microsoft, was released. And to this day, we're still not sure whether we should thank or curse Bill Gates.
Get used to disappointment.
I had a couple of glitches that reared their ugly heads last week on the podcast, and I'm sorry for that. I haven't been able to determine exactly what the causes were. In one case, it was my error, and in another case, it was a problem in getting the material up to the server. I seem to have been able to correct things, but I'm going to be double-checking everything for the next few days to make sure that it gets uploaded properly. Earlier this year, former President Trump conveyed to his supporters a promise of retribution if he secured a second term. I mean, really, if you're going to take the high road, you won't do this. But when I look at the deep state and the way it's manifesting itself now, after having had 4 years of Trump, the deep state has come back with a vengeance, with their own form of retribution. I don't know. My attitude now is, Mr. Trump, you get in there and do whatever you have to do. And last week, he declared his intention to instruct the Justice Department to investigate every Marxist prosecutor in America. That's a tall order. But if anybody can do it, I think Trump can. How much cooperation he's going to get, I think, is totally dependent on how loyal his people are. Now, over the weekend, Trump pledged to root out what he referred to as radical left thugs within the country. And according to The Hill, Trump's own statements have unmistakably revealed his fixation on revenge and targeting perceived adversaries. Not sure I like the use of that word perceived, but then again, we're quoting The Hill. The Hill used to be a good conservative publication, but I wonder about their conservatism these days. But, again, according to The Hill, his own statements have unmistakably revealed his fixation on revenge and targeting perceived adversaries in the event of a re-election. In recent days, he openly contemplated that his potential indictment would allow him to exploit the government against his opponents. I'm a little uneasy with that. But how in the heck else are you going to drain the swamp? Now, naturally, these remarks have triggered a warning among critics who fear that a second Trump administration might lack the safeguards present during his initial 4 years in office. According to Sarah Matthews, a former Trump White House and campaign press aide, Trump's focus seems to be on consolidating power for personal revenge rather than improving the lives of his supporters or Americans in general. But then again, that's one person's opinion. Just the same, Trump's rhetoric paints a pretty vivid picture of an individual increasingly fixated on targeting those he believes have wronged him. Loyalty is a big thing with him. Am I a little uneasy with this? Yeah, I am. But yet, on the other hand, it's going to take a Donald Trump to straighten this really messed up country out. In March, he actually stated at the Conservative Political Action Committee, you know, CPAC, I am your warrior, I am your justice. And for those who've been wronged and betrayed, I'm your retribution. You know, those words kind of, they walk a fine line, right? Now, Trump has previously called for defunding the FBI and DOJ while facing federal investigations of his own. He's also suggested treason by high-ranking officials and used incendiary language to describe political opponents. But then again, you have to look at the other side of this coin. Let's bear in mind the language his critics have used against him. And when I say his critics, I'm including the mainstream media, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN. They were brutal. Do you remember the incendiary language those networks used, as well as the newspapers, when Trump was over in Europe? My God. So can you blame this guy? And he's consistently talked about starting investigations into Biden, his family, and others if he returns to the White House. I think Congress is ahead of him on that one now, though. He's even indicated a willingness to weaponize the DOJ for such purposes. Well, the precedent has already been set, hasn't it? And despite pushback from the Trump campaign, Trump's own rhetoric raises concerns about the potential lack of constraints in a second term. The fear is that unrestrained, he could use the government to target perceived enemies. And there's a key word right there, perceived enemies. They may or may not be enemies. They probably are. But he demonstrated this in his first term when he faced impeachment over urging Ukraine to investigate the Biden family. Never mind the fact that he was right. And this is another thing we have to bear in mind. As he uses incendiary language, which I wish he wouldn't use, and I sure hope he doesn't go back to tweeting the way he used to, but he will. That's him. It's what he does. But let's not forget the fact that as this was going on, Trump was right. So as he dominates the Republican primary field and leads in polls, the very prospect of his re-election raises worries among experts and former administration officials, particularly Democrats. The concern is that a second term might see a less constrained Trump, which is an excellent point. They see him surrounded by appointees more willing to execute his agenda without opposition. So the prevailing sentiment among experts, I know, the use of that word experts, what constitutes an expert? Well, somebody who's just had a lot of experience. But the prevailing sentiment among these so-called experts is that the constraints that existed during his first term might be less robust, actually allowing Trump to act on his grudges with increased boldness. And we all know what that can lead to in politics, don't we? So the possibility of Trump winning re-election has become a tangible reality. More and more tangible by the day. Look at the polls. But then again, they are just polls. I've always cautioned about that. When polls come forward and they say something really great about the candidate you have in mind, and then election day gets here, the numbers are so different. So it is a tangible reality that Trump could be re-elected. And this prompts serious consideration about the potential implications of a second term. I mean, don't panic. I'm not turning against Trump. I'm not. I really think that as messed up as this country is, not just this country, the entire Western world, look at the rise in anti-Semitism. This would not happen under Trump. Look at the violent demonstrations we've seen so far in support of Hamas. On our shores, this should not be, but it is. And we all should recoil, not in fear, but in deep consideration of what the implications are here. On the one hand, Trump could be very vengeful. On the other, it's going to take a Trump to straighten this messed up, not just United States, but Western world. It has got to be straightened up. My friend, we are careening headlong into World War III. I am and have been a member of AFTRA-SAG, that's American Federation of Television and Radio Artists and Screen Actors Guild, for, good couple of decades. And I thought this was kind of an interesting story here. What's the byline on this? This is a guy who is with Associated Press, Matt O'Brien. And he says, the country singers, romance novelists, video game artists, and voice actors are appealing to the U.S. government for relief as soon as possible from the threat that artificial intelligence poses to their livelihoods. Now, understand that this is a real threat. I've already seen and heard some examples of AI, and it's pretty stunning what they're able to do. So a podcaster concerned about his voice being replicated by AI in one of thousands of letters recently submitted to the U.S. Copyright Office said, please regulate AI. I'm scared. Now, technology companies, by contrast, are largely happy with the status quo that's been enabling them to gobble up published works to make their AI systems better at mimicking what humans do. Now, the nation's top copyright official hasn't yet taken sides, but she told the Associated Press that she's listening to everyone as her office weighs whether copyright reforms are needed for a new era of generative AI tools that can spit out compelling imagery, music, video, and passages of text. Think about this. AI, in its current iteration, is capable of bringing back the dead. You could feasibly have a new Humphrey Bogart movie. Now, Shira Perlmutter, who's the U.S. Register of Copyrights, said in an interview, she says, we've received close to 10,000 comments. Every one of them is being read by a human being, not a computer, and I myself am reading a large part of them. Now, Perlmutter directs the U.S. Copyright Office, and they've registered more than 480,000 copyrights just last year, covering millions of individual works. But they're increasingly being asked to register works that are AI-generated. And so far, copyright claims for fully machine-generated content have been soundly rejected because copyright laws are designed to protect works of human authorship, which is really a no-brainer. But Perlmutter asks, as humans feed content in to AI systems and give instructions to influence what comes out, is there a point at which there's enough human involvement in controlling the expressive elements of the output that the human can be considered to have contributed authorship? Wow, what a bucket of worms. And that's one question the Copyright Office has put to the public. A bigger one, the question that's fielded thousands of comments from creative professions, is what to do about copyrighted human works that are being pulled from the internet and other sources and ingested to train AI systems, often without permission or compensation. And this is one reality that must be dealt with and dealt with now, because this is going on now. More than 9,700 comments were sent to the Copyright Office, part of the Library of Congress, before an initial comment period closed in late October. Another round of comments is due by December 6th. And after that, Perlmutter's office is going to work to advise Congress and others on whether reforms really are needed. I'm betting they are. Addressing the the ladies and gentlemen of the U.S. Copyright Office, the Family Ties actor and filmmaker Justine Bateman, she's a pretty smart cookie, said she was disturbed that AI models were ingesting 100 years of film and TV in a way that could destroy the structure of the film business and replace large portions of its labor pipeline. Now, naturally, a lot of these stars are concerned about their fat incomes, and they should be concerned. Because what are the heads of the studios going to do? They're going to concern themselves with the bottom line. Right now, Hollywood is hurting. But think of how this will really stun the overall economy. The entertainment industry in the Western world is huge. And if AI gets in there and really ends up obliterating the human element, think about this. AI is not just about what you hear and what you see. It's about what is written. They're training AI to write scripts. And maybe they should, because face it, Hollywood hasn't come out with anything new that wasn't Marvel. And even Marvel now is nothing more than a rehash of the last Marvel film. I mean, what's coming out of Hollywood is pure garbage. Maybe AI could improve on that. So these artists should be concerned. I mean, even what I'm doing right here, right now, can be done through AI. I'm glad I'm not a 20-something in this business, because I would have to find another line of work, period. Now, Bateman says, it appears to many of us to be the largest copyright violation in the history of the United States, and I sincerely hope you can stop this practice of thievery. Well, she's got a point. It is thievery. But, you know, here again, somebody just built a better mousetrap. Actually, they're building a better mouse. And airing some of the same AI concerns that fueled this year's Hollywood strikes, because that was what was really behind these strikes. Television showrunner Lila Zuckerman said her industry should declare war on what's nothing more than a plagiarism machine before Hollywood is co-opted by greedy and craven companies who want to take human talent out of entertainment. That's a quote. But again, good point. The music industry is also threatened. And Nashville-based songwriter Mark Beeson, who penned tunes for Carrie Underwood and Garth Brooks, he said AI has potential to do good, but in some ways it's like a gun in the wrong hands. With no parameters in place for its use, it could do irreparable damage to one of the last true American art forms. Right again. And while most commenters were individuals, their concerns were echoed by big music publishers. Universal Music Group called the way AI is trained ravenous and poorly controlled. And that's a big company. I would have expected a big company like them to favor AI. But no, they call it ravenous and poorly controlled. And then there are other author groups and news organizations, including the New York Times and the Associated Press themselves. So, the question here is it fair use? What leading tech companies like Google, Microsoft, and ChatGPT maker OpenAI are telling the Copyright Office is that their training of AI models, AI models, fits into the fair use doctrine that allows for limited uses of copyrighted materials, such as for teaching, research, or transforming the copyrighted work into something different. And that right there is the most ominous part of this whole argument. So, there's a letter from Meta Platforms, the parent company of Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. And said the American AI industry is built in part on the understanding that the Copyright Act does not prescribe the use of copyrighted material to train generative AI models. The purpose of AI training is to identify patterns across a broad body of content, not to extract or reproduce individual works. Well, so far, courts have largely sided with tech companies in interpreting how copyright laws should treat AI systems. And in a defeat for visual artists, a federal judge in San Francisco just last month dismissed much of the first big lawsuit against AI image generators, though allowed some of the case to proceed. Now, most tech companies cite as precedent Google's success in beating back legal challenges to its online book library. The Supreme Court in 2016 let stand lower court rulings that rejected authors' claim that Google's digitizing of millions of books and showing snippets of them to the public amounted to copyright infringement. Mm-hmm. How would you like to be one of the justices to have to chew over that one? But see, that's a flawed comparison. According to former law professor and best-selling romance author Heidi Bond, who writes under the pen name of Courtney Milan, Bond says she agrees that fair use encompasses the right to learn from books, but Google Books obtained legitimate copies held by libraries and institutions, whereas many AI developers are scraping works of writing through outright piracy. Piracy is a big problem these days, particularly against musicians. So Perlmutter said that this is what the Copyright Office is trying to help sort out. I wish them all the luck in the world. I really do. Perlmutter said that certainly this differs in some respects from the Google situation. Whether it differs enough to rule out the fair use defense is the question at hand. Again, Ms. Perlmutter, good luck. In the first segment, I voiced my concern about a second Trump presidency. I have also expressed my concern that there may not be one. And I think we need Donald Trump, probably in the worst way. But some of the names being bantered back and forth as to who might be his running mate have been some pretty interesting names. And one that Fox has been throwing around lately, and it makes good sense, makes perfect sense, is that of Tulsi Gabbard. Now, remember, she was a Democrat when she served in the House. But she left the Democrat Party with quite a lot of fanfare. She started her own podcast, which is followed by millions of people. She's on Fox a lot. And she sounds like a conservative. Now, let me say this. She sounds like a constitutional conservative. Well, the other night she was talking with Sean Hannity. And I want you to listen to what she has to say here.
This is one of the main reasons, Sean, that I left the Democrat Party. It is clear, and it has been for some time, that they don't care about the safety, security, or freedom of the American people. And they have become apologists for these Islamist jihadists. And Sean, I got to tell you, for those like me, the many Americans like me who enlisted in the military because of the 9/11 jihadist terrorist attack on us, this is incredibly offensive. You know, I've deployed three times to war zones in the Middle East and in Africa. I know how serious this threat of Islamist jihadism is. The Democrat elite, they don't care. They don't care. They leave our borders wide open, which we know are being exploited by these Islamist terrorists. And they redirect our security infrastructure, our assets, our intel assets, not towards focusing on these terror threats that are coming through our borders and elsewhere. They're focusing them on fellow Americans. They're focusing them on people who they have deemed as domestic terrorism threats or extremists, also known as people who are supporters of President Donald Trump or conservatives. And I want to point out, really, Sarah mentioned this, but most importantly, we know that Iran has sleeper terrorist cells here in America. And unlike the Al-Qaeda, these terrorist sleeper cells have the access and capability and may have already brought in nuclear material into this country, waiting to be activated, and if used, could launch an attack here, right here at home, that would make 9/11 look small in comparison. So the graveness of the threats that we face right now, Sean, because of the failures of this administration, the Democrat elite, because they do not care about us, our safety, or our security, this is what we're facing.
I think, especially with the UN, Jennifer Griffin reporting that the next chair of the Human Rights Commission at the Human Rights Council at the UN is going to be Iran. Yet we fund most of that organization, the WEF, the WHO, with coronavirus. Why are we a part of these globalist organizations, number one? And number two, what should America's role be if Turkey, if Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, Syria are all after one country? What should America's role be? We only have about a minute.
Well, I want to make the most of this time, Sean. You're right. The leaders of our country are not putting the best interest, the security interests of the American people first. The example you cited earlier about Turkey's Erdogan citing Hamas as being freedom fighters. Well, Erdogan himself is part of the Muslim Brotherhood. Erdogan himself is a supporter of ISIS and al-Qaeda. Erdogan
out
himself
of NATO.
Has murdered
Throw him out.
Our Syrian. He should have been
Throw
kicked out a
Turkey
long time ago.
Out.
But American leaders don't have the courage to do what is necessary. That's the problem.
Boy, amen. Amen. She is 100% right. But in the final analysis, is she going to be a running mate for Donald Trump? She could be, because she said, quoting her, she said that she would be open to having a conversation with former President Donald Trump about potentially being his running mate. And quite frankly, I don't think he could do better. Maybe South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, but Kristi doesn't have the experience in watching world events. At least I don't believe she does. I don't want to make a blanket statement like that. But from all the points of view that Tulsi Gabbard has now, given her experience having deployed three times to war zones in the Middle East and Africa. Wow, what a powerful force she could be, and a very useful and functional vice president. Once again, we go back to Provo, Utah, and Dry Bar Comedy. This time around, we've got Tony Darrow.
Thank you, Utah. It was a long trip to get here, but thank you. You guys are so nice. It took me, I flew here, it took all day long. They flew me here in coach, but to their credit, Dry Bar apologized for flying me coach, but explained that they couldn't find anything cheaper. So, but it's good to get out, right? It's good to get back to some type of normalcy after all we've been through this last couple of years, right? But I, you know what? But I think I was intent that something good was going to come out of this for me. I really like tried to focus on the positive. Like, for example, I couldn't wear these pants before the pandemic. They were way too loose. But now, they are. Nice and tight, baby. Let me tell you, that never would have happened without sitting home for a year eating. I stopped drinking during the pandemic. And thank you, yes. But I love beer. So I started drinking no alcohol beer. Have you ever had it? It's really good. So I go to the store to buy it. I don't know how it works in Utah, but in my state where I'm from, and I wanted to quit, I had to quit drinking because I read the article that said that drinking can make you look older, and I turned 30 this year. So. But in my state, like I live in Connecticut, which for my Spanish-speaking friends, you know, it's a Spanish word that means with Connecticut. But, but in my state where, and I don't know if it worked here, if you're over 60, because I'm 63, you could go into the store an hour early. Did that work like that here?
Yeah.
So I'm going into the store to go buy my no-alcohol beer, my Heineken Zero, and the girl stops me going in. And she makes me pull my mask down. She wants to see my license to prove that I'm over 60. And then she apologizes, and I say, no need. It's an honor just to be nominated. And then I go do my shopping, and I go to the cashier to pay for my no-alcohol Heineken Zero, and she wants to see my ID to prove that I'm over 21. Why? It doesn't have any alcohol in it. Plus the fact, whose life has been so tragic, they look like this at 20. What could have possibly happened to you? She should be holding a benefit from me, not IDing me. you raised in a coal mine by crows? How did this happen? And if I could do this to my face and body at 20, you don't think I'm capable of producing a fake ID? But I comply, I share my license, and as I'm walking out of the store, I realize I've really come a long way in 63 years, haven't I? Went from buying real beer with a fake ID to buying fake beer with a real ID.
Make it a marvelous Monday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
That's it?
Good morning, G-Man.